Hey guys, Steven here from Geek Nerd Tech, and I've got something very exciting to tell you. You've seen her fly, now watch her move to a brand new network. The CW has a new hero when Supergirl lands October 10th. It's the season 2 premiere of the show critics call pure and blissful fun. This season, the Man of Steel will finally be revealed. Supergirl's Melissa Benoist teams up with Tyler Hoechlin, the newest Superman in the DC Universe. It's a superhuman family reunion when these Kryptonian cousins join forces in the fight for justice. And if you're wondering if the next president will be a woman, we have your answer, because Linda Carter, the original Wonder Woman, guest stars as Supergirl's Commander-in-Chief. Even though Supergirl has her hands full fighting evil full-time, Kara Danvers is facing changes as challenges of her own. She knows what it takes to be a hero, but Kara is trying to figure out how to fit in with the human race while taking on a new job, new friends, and a new love, who's out of this world. An evil corporate empire will rise that bears the name of an age-old nemesis, Luthor. Supergirl and Superman come face-to-face with Lex Luthor's next of kin, Lillian and Lena. As you might expect, the Luthor family shares a passion for power that can only be satisfied by a different kind of green, kryptonite. Supergirl, all new episodes every Monday, now only on the CW.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Facebook is making a push on all fronts. And is Snapchat really worth $25 billion? Let's see.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
DJ Premier. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live, the show we break down geek news and tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective.
Yes, sir.
I don't know why I keep messing that up. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined by Keely Shine. What's up, Keely?
What's good, man?
How you doing?
I'm chilling, man. I'm chilling. Loving this Gangstar, man.
Gangstar.
Guru.
Guru. R.I.P.
Premier.
And DJ Premier.
Yeah, man.
What, like, how do you, is DJ Premier overrated, underrated, or properly rated as a producer?
I mean, he's definitely top five producers. Right. I think he's properly rated. Like, his, I mean, the span of his tenure, I mean, he's still cooking up beats. And just, like, the diversity, like, for him to be able to do stuff in different time periods and mm-hmm. just different genres, like, and just the usage of sampling. Like, he's, I mean, he's undeniably top five.
Right. And I agree. But what do you think about his ability? I know, DJ Premier, what do you think about his ability to be diverse? I mean, is he kind of like
saying.
A one? But I'm saying, is he kind of like, because what he does? The knock on him is he's a one trick pony, but it's a really good trick. Like in terms of his use of sampling and scratching and kind of how he does his thing.
You can make the argument with every producer. You could say Dr. Dre is one trick pony.
Sure,
you know,
right.
Or you could say Kanye is a one trick pony.
Right.
Maybe not as much as Kanye's because he's super diverse. But yeah. I mean, Premier kind of gave birth to a lot of these producers.
Absolutely.
When you talk about like Ninth Wonder, you talk about
That's great.
What's my man from? I'm drawing a blank. Black Star, Reflection Eternal, Telepharly, and High Tech.
Yeah.
Like, all these guys
They're definitely children of Premier. That's a really good point. Plus, I think what he did with that, and this is going back a few years now, but. That Christina Aguilera joint, Ain't No Other Man, was a really good example of a good kind of like pop R&B song.
Exactly.
That 100% felt like DJ Premier. When you think about it, it was just a dope track.
Yeah, records with Craig David.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely was able to bridge multiple genres. That's why I love him.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
Sophisticated in terms of just, man, scratching and just the sampling. It's just dope, man.
It's also a hallmark of a great producer when, you know, as a hip-hop artist, as an MC, you feel like you haven't really made it until you've had a premiere beat.
Oh yeah,
you can't.
That's a stamp of approval.
Yeah, you can't have. Yeah. You can't name one person who has a work with DJ Premier.
Biggie, Nas, all Jay-Z,
everybody. All the greats, even the Beastie Boy, everybody.
Exactly.
You know, people are like, I need a premiere beat.
100.
So interesting.
I mean, well, but damn, bro, you ain't got no takes on Guru.
Oh well, Guru. I mean, look, I'm a just Gangstar from literally day one.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I've been Gangstar from day one, first album.
Mm-hmm.
I have every record, early on every record,
mm-hmm.
anticipating every record.
100.
So yeah, you know, and Guru's the best. We were talking offline about Jazzmatazz. Was also an interesting experience.
Great ensemble of albums.
Grant, so I just actually downloaded them all from Apple Music to revisit them
mm-hmm.
because I kind of forgot. And I think we were talking about that last one, whatever it is. I don't think I even heard it. As I just contradicted myself, say I'm all things Gangstar. But why am I all things Gangstar? I'm not all things Jazzmatazz.
I hear it, but I mean, you got to think that concept fusing jazz and hip hop. Like, we see that all the time now, especially with, like, you know, artists and albums like Robert Glasper. I think he was innovative with that to be able to, like, yo, I got my hardcore, you know, street hip hop stuff, but yep, I could also flip it and do some really sophisticated, really incredible and sophisticated music with jazz.
Exactly. Not only incredible and sophisticated, but really just kind of deep, deep in the jazz cut, like pulling out deep, exactly, deep jazz dudes.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's also good to, it's also like a weird thing where you're giving young guys and hip hop guys sort of like, you know, an opportunity to see where this music comes from.
Yeah, and the similarities, you know? Because right, jazz and hip hop in terms of improvisation and freestyling, yeah, you do it with the instrument, we do it with our voice, like there's parallels, you
absolutely
know?
Absolutely. So it's great. Last thing I'll say, this is the all guru Gangstar podcast.
I know, right?
Last thing I'll say about that is, the thing about Gangstar in general is, and people, but the knock on them is they're kind of same-ish sounding, because Premier is kind of the same-ish, and Guru's voice is very monotone and same-ish, so they're very hard to listen to, like, in a whole album straight through of all Gangstar, which I kind of disagree, but I do agree. But what I will say about that is, you can just grab any Gangstar album and play any track, and it's banging.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I love about Gangstar. Like, oh, what's it? Oh, okay, who cares?
Oh, yeah.
And it may be tough to listen to the whole thing back to front, mm-hmm, but you can always just pick a random track, and it's going to be on point, because that's what Guru and Premier do. So.
Yeah, and, you know, the latest homage with Luke Cage, all the yep, episode titles are, you know, giving homage to Gangstar.
Yep.
And I think that's pretty cool, too.
Yep. So. Cool. Well, let's talk about the Gangstar of the internet, Mark Zuckerberg. It's a horrible segue. So, Zuck, we did a lot of talk about Google last two weeks. It was all Google all the time. And I think Mark Zuckerberg heard us, because Facebook is making some moves this time. They're like, you know, we talk about Facebook either when the new thing comes out, they either try to acquire it, or they try to make a better version of it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they have the intel early. So the new thing is that they're launching something called Work, which is a social network for your office. It's essentially going after Slack.
Yeah.
And Slack is a very, very specific thing, and not everyone knows about it, but if you're in an office setting, or you use office communication, you're probably using it. It's taken over big time in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm, and in Austin and in New York, and here in the entertainment industry, people are using it a lot. Mm-hmm. I've only used it a little bit.
I've used it on a number of projects.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely a great way, especially when you have a bunch of email clutter like I do,
exactly,
coming through, and you miss emails.
Just streamlines it, you know, yeah, keeps it in a central place.
So what Facebook is rolling out Work, which is their answer to Slack, and I think that, you know, with the Facebook, you slap the Facebook brand on it, and you have a platform that people are already using already, it may work, or it may be tainted because it has a Facebook name. What do you think?
No, definitely not tainted. I think this is what Apple has done. You know, Apple wasn't the first company to make MP3 player. They weren't the first company to make, you know, a touchable device. They weren't the first company to make a tablet. So same thing with Facebook. They don't necessarily have to be inventive in the sense like, hey, we originated this IP. We're just augmenting it.
Right.
I mean, we're in a remixing society where, hey, even though we talk about Premiere, like, hey, he didn't necessarily make the music. He sampled it and made something dope out of it. Same thing, you know? So I feel like that's the advantage that Facebook has, because they have the user base. They're able to look at a company that's maybe, you know, generating some attention and be like, hey, we'll throw you some bees, we'll throw you some money and acquire you, or if you don't want to be acquired, then we'll just do it better than you, like Snapchat, you know, Instagram, you know.
Absolutely.
So
I mean, they have what's fascinating to me is that Snakebook. Facebook has the R&D and the money and the bandwidth and the brains up there to be able to pivot and do pretty much anything. Like, so when they hear something, they hear something done, they're like, oh, we could do that. And they get in there and they figure out a way to do it. Now, not every time, but, you know.
I mean, it's to the point that we make a lot on the shows. Like, you want a platform wants to keep their user base in the ecosystem. We don't want you to leave. Once you come in the home, we want you to feel good.
Right.
And we're going to give you the best couches, serve you tea, give you the red carpet treatment.
That's
and
right.
So, hey, we're going to give you everything you need. Like, you don't need to use Slack.
That's
we
right.
have that. We,
yeah.
have, we have the best version of
That's
it.
That's right. That's so. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. I personally, you know, because me personally, I mentioned that sort of Facebook stigma because I personally have that. This is a Joe Braswell problem. I have Facebook has a bit of a funk on it to me, so I don't know.
I don't know why you say that.
I'm just really, really anti Facebook. I don't know if it's the idea of it. I don't know if it's I saw the social network and I don't know what got me, but I'm just really having a real problem with it. But anyway, speaking of which, Facebook also made a move and they released their own standalone app for events. It's kind of like a hybrid of iCal, which they already existed, which is a dedicated thing, and something like Eventbrite, which is sort of like a way to integrate all the stuff that you're getting filtered through Facebook anyway, stuff that's getting filtered through the web, and I'll put it all in one place, one dedicated place, which is also very smart.
I think it's super smart. It's very similar to what they've done with Facebook Messenger.
Right.
You know, that used to be a part of the ensemble of Facebook, but now they made it a standalone app and doing the same thing with this. It's another way to, you know, another monetization play, like, hey, and we talk about them going after Slack or you know, Instagram owned by Facebook going after Snapchat. I feel they're going to go after like Ticketmaster, like you said, Eventbrite, and be the centralized destination point for, you know, events for ticket sales or for any type of event, be it birthdays, be it, you know, the local event, being the concert or the sporting event. I think that's the move that they're trying to make, to be able to have all that in one place and to be able to use that as a way to generate even more revenue and money. So
right. I agree. I mean, this is kind of also an example of what we're talking about with Google, where, you know, once you have established all of, first of all, you establish the giant ecosystem of Facebook or Google or whatever it is, and you establish that, and then you establish all these little miniature features that you have within that, and then you just drop one thing that kind of consolidates them all. That's just really smart. You can't do it from the ground up. You can't just make a thing and then have everyone come to you, but you can't have all the things already and then like, hey, all this shit we already do, I'm going to put it all in one place, events.
Dang.
And then have it be its own thing, and then all that does is just it helps consolidate and strengthen the users you already have, makes them not want to leave, and then also pulls other people in. Like, oh, I could do this on Facebook.
Same thing with Google. Know? Google has an ensemble of apps. Like they're all apart, but they're also also singular. Right. You know, Gmail is singular. You know, all YouTube is singular. Right. You know, but even they're still under the umbrella of Google. So I think Facebook is kind of doing something similar as Google is doing. You know,
and Google was able to pull that together and say, hey, all that stuff, we're going to put it right here in the Pixel. Boom.
Exactly.
You know, and so do you think Facebook's going to have hardware?
Hardware in the sense that they're going to make a device?
Yeah, the Facebook phone. The Face phone.
I hope not. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them. That might be years away. It might be something completely different that may not be in a outward facing alignment with Facebook. Like, for instance, like Oculus is hardware.
Yeah.
If Facebook owns it, I could see them acquiring something.
That makes sense.
But it wouldn't be named the Facebook phone or something like that, you know?
I mean, I don't know. I also often wonder the value, and I mean, Google's going to find out, but I also wonder the value of the consumer electronic business at this point. Like, is it, you know, I know people buy shit, people are going to continue to buy actual products, but like, if you're like, what is the advantage of actually spending money and developing like an actual handheld device? Seems like it's kind of a loss leader to me. And if I'm already making billions on not developing something hard.
Yeah, I don't see why that would be strategically sound for them at this point. I mean, but like, for instance, like I just brought up Oculus. It's a new medium, so of course they want it to be on the groundbreaking. They want it to be on the basement floor of that,
right?
And so I think that's why they acquired them. But I'm sure there will be other mediums that arise in the next few years that Facebook's going to want to have an early entrenchment in. And so I can see them streamlining some of these Facebook standalones through maybe the new device that hasn't been invented yet, but right. I don't think that's something we'll see tomorrow.
Right, I agree. Continuing on with Facebook, because this is like almost the all Facebook podcast, Instagram, owned by Facebook, just hit 100 million daily views with Instagram stories in just 2 months. The shit launched 2 months ago, and they're already at 100 million daily views, which on one hand, you could probably predict because Instagram had a crazy amount of users. You know, there's definitely overlap between people who use Facebook and, I mean, to use Snapchat and Instagram. So the idea that you can do your Snapchat shit on Instagram or versions of it, it would make sense that people already know how to do it, know what it is, and people were using it from day one.
Right.
There are a lot of people like my sister who are like, this is stupid, but who are there, you know. I use Snapchat. I've yet to use Instagram stories. That being said, this is incredible, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we talked about ages ago on the show when Instagram did the same thing with Vine, when Vine was the hot shit because they had the, you know, the 6 second video, whatever, and Instagram didn't have video at the time. And so then when Instagram said, you know what, hey guys, 15 seconds now, and pretty much we don't even talk about Vine anymore. And so I feel like this is the same move strategically that they're doing with Snapchat, being that Snapchat's valuation is $25 billion and they have a lot of users as well. Like, they want to be able to silence them, to shut them out. And so I think it's crazy that you could take, I mean, it's business. It's how the world works. You could take someone else's idea and almost call it the same thing,
right,
and do it better. And I think that's, I think we're going to be in a war pretty soon. You know, yeah, what I'm saying? I think we're in the war now, to be honest.
I do too. Well, speaking of that, that's an interesting question I want to ask you. I'm going to ask you just dead or alive to some companies. This one I know the answer. Meerkat, dead or alive?
Oh, man. Who? What?
Dead, right?
Man.
Okay. Vine.
Meerkat was dead on the birthing table.
Dead on arrival.
Dead on arrival.
Vine, dead or alive?
Man, I mean, I think it's irrelevant. I mean, I think it's niched out. I think it's for a niche audience. And when you juxtapose it to other platforms that offer video, I don't think Vine is generating revenue compared to Instagram or compared to Facebook or compared to Snapchat. So not even an argument.
At a certain point, it's just kind of like a parlor trick. Like, can you do something in 8 seconds? Can you do it? It's all sort of comedy, all kind of whack comedy, in my opinion.
Or singing or doing stuff like that.
Right. And the question is, like you said, do advertisers want to be a part of that? So, I don't know.
Good luck, Twitter.
All right. And then next, Periscope, dead or alive?
I think Facebook got them. I mean, when you talk about Facebook Live, mm-hmm. like, why? I'm in the ecosystem. Most of my friends are on Facebook.
Yep.
Like, why do I need to go out of Facebook to stream live? No one's on there.
Yeah.
Like, the users aren't there. So I want to be able to, if I'm going to use this as a platform to speak to people and connect with people, I want to speak to where the people are.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're not there.
I've been doing a lot of watching. I've been doing a lot of Facebook Live watching lately. And that's very interesting. Not a bad platform. I did a lot of, The Ringer has a lot of Facebook Live stuff. So their political show, Keeping the 1600, another podcast, which I like. They do Facebook streaming before and after the debate. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it. Yeah. But they simulcast on Periscope and Facebook Live.
Yeah, why not?
But, you know, I'm sure they're what they're getting from Facebook Live far exceeded Periscope.
100%.
So I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to that same vein, Snapchat is evaluated. New valuation came in, $25 billion. You know, I say this every time.
Bubble.
Remember when Facebook tried to offer them $3 billion, and then they said no to that. Yeah, and everybody was like, "What? You crazy kid? You're stupid."
$3 billion.
And now they're sitting at $25 billion. The question is it really worth $25 billion? Like, what are they doing? Like, what, really?
I mean, these valuations in the tech age, that's a lot of people will argue, you know, when is the bubble going to burst? Like, is a lot of this inflated? Is a lot of this manufactured? But, I mean, when you think about their user base and their potentiality for advertisers and revenue, like, it's up there. They have low numbers in terms of their employees, in terms of the infrastructure. So it's like they're not outputting a lot of money in terms of that part. So it's like, hey, we have users, we have the audience, we have a captive audience, and we have advertisers. So yeah,
right.
we can our valuation makes sense.
Right.
But I don't know about the sustainability of Snapchat when we talk about them battling, you know, some of the other foes that are on the horizon. So
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, at a certain point, Snapchat, what Snapchat does, Instagram has proved this, what Snapchat does is not sort of, this is not a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's replicable so far. Like, what they're doing is not proprietary.
Well, not the glasses that you said you were going to buy.
Yeah. I think that's replicable too. Click. I feel like that what they're doing is can be replicated and maybe improved upon. Like, people can just study Snapchat. So we're laying the cut, you know, study Snapchat for like 2 or 3 years and then blop.
Take
it
home.
Yeah. Yep. And then drop something else. So I really wonder and worry about Snapchat's future, although they still seem to be sort of reinventing. I think it's more of a story. What's interesting to me about Snapchat is less about what the app does and what the app's capable to do. It's really more about how we consume media and how we share media.
Right.
And so I think that Snapchat, where they're smart about that is all of their, when they launched their Snapchat
Discover,
and then it kind of improved upon that, the new interface with that, and now it's just kind of improving. Lo was telling me that, you know, I laughed at her, but she's like, that's where I get all my news, the Snapchat. I was like, what? And I went on there, and I'm like, oh, you know what? It's not much different than Twitter. I was telling people 2-3 years ago, like, I get all my news from Twitter, and people were like, what? And then I'm like, yeah, I get all my news from Twitter, because everybody I follow is on Twitter. They are linked to their articles. I can know what to read, know what to watch. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing on Snapchat, except that you don't link to the full article. You get the abbreviated version of the article from the same people. It's, again, it's about how people consume media. So Snapchat seems to be at the forefront of that. Now, can people replicate that, you know, moving forward? I don't see why not, but they've already got the user base.
Yeah, they have the user base.
But so did Friendster.
I wouldn't diminish them to that. I would say they're definitely...
So did MySpace. MySpace had a user base, too.
Yeah, but I think they're smarter than MySpace. I don't think that if I were to put money down on the fight between Snapchat and Facebook, I wouldn't put my money with Snapchat. I'll put it with Facebook. Yeah. I think Facebook is more, it's more ubiquitous, it's more captivating.
Sure.
It has more tools.
But 25 Bs versus 100 Bs is definitely whatever Facebook's at is ridiculous. You know.
And yeah, being that Facebook owns Instagram, I think Instagram is going to take it. They're going to take it from them.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I really don't see Instagram. I don't know. I'm this part of me is rooting for Snapchat, but Snapchat's got to do a lot about sort of they've got to do a lot in shedding their millennials only
model.
Yeah, model.
That's their business model,
and then also that's their brand identity. Their brand identity is like millennials only with the ghost and the yellow, and that's working for them because millennials. And maybe the bet is you take these millennials, they grow up into 30 and 40 year olds who have that brand loyalty.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but we'll see. It's very very interesting to find out how that plays out. But 25B and growing, we'll see. Moving on, this is unbelievable to me because this is something people talk about all the time, which is the idea of having the first fingerprint reading handgun, which is like would do a lot to sort of solve a lot of our gun issues, and the technology's there. It doesn't seem like it's impossible. You see this on a bunch of sci-fi movies. I want to say again, I think maybe Minority Report. I can't remember.
But let's just say so. Yeah,
I know they did everything else.
Exactly.
But you've seen this technology before. I think Blade Runner had it. But the idea of like having the gun that won't fire unless it knows it's you is a great idea. And a 19-year-old built one. Jeffrey A. Fowler built the first fingerprint handgun, which I think is dope, except for the fact that it's a 19-year-old fucking with handguns. But hey, what do you think of this?
I mean, I think it's a great synthesis of technology and defense.
Right.
And I think that in the sense of getting it out of the hands of children, I think is great. In the sense of I think it could be also exploited for. I mean, we always talk about this. It could be exploited. There's always two sides to a coin. Like if someone takes the gun from you, and I don't know what I'm saying. I would say that it seems like a great idea because it's able to protect. I guess the public from people that might either take a gun and use it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So I think simplified, I think it's good for that.
I wonder how difficult it is to disable. I mean, like in other words, if you stole a gun, procured a gun illegally, I'll take out the fingerprint thing. But I do. I mean, look, I like it because for a fact that, and also in terms of crime, like they'll always know who fired a weapon. Because they'll be able to identify who fired that weapon. Because if you kill somebody, they don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think
touch ID on the weapon, huh?
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We have it on our phones.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they can't have it on guns. Next, Samsung, who is in a bunch of trouble. Just exploding shit. The new versions is exploding.
Don't you got one?
Nah, I do
you
not.
You said last week you wanted one. Come on.
No, I did not want one of
those. Oh, you said you want the Google Pixel. That's what you said.
First of all, I didn't say I wanted it. I can for the first time say I can't say that I'll be Apple loyalist forever.
Okay.
I've never even said those words, but like Google's making a very interesting argument for another ecosystem, another world to join. Although I'm pretty much an Apple loyalist, but I am not. I'm a Samsung. I'm on the opposite side. I'm the North. Samsung is the South. Like I'm not with it.
Okay.
Not like our boy Manuel, who's ride or die. But so Samsung is trying to take some attention off of their exploding phones and have teamed up with Viv, who are the guys who are originally made Siri. Did Siri. So we did a story on them like a few months ago, and they're kind of floating out there doing their thing, trying to figure it out. Well, Samsung's acquired them and said like, and they make the argument. in that. You know, we did Siri. You know, we did the best version of this AI.
Yeah.
And we've improved on it already.
Right.
And now we're offering that technology in our brains to Samsung, and Samsung said, "Come on over."
Yeah.
So is this news?
I think it is news because I mean, we talk about Google Assistant, we talk about Siri, Cortana, we talk about the Echo, Amazon Echo. Veeve, I think, you know, being that the brainchild of Siri came from these guys that are now creating Veeve, they were the leaders in this space, the artificial intelligence space, and to be able to develop something that's even more advanced than Siri and offer it to the competitor. I think there's bad blood between Apple and the creators of Veeve, so yep. I think they want to be able to say, you know what, hey, we did that, now we're doing something even better, and F you, Apple, you know what I'm right. saying? Like, so I think Samsung needs something like this to stay, you know, relevant and stay in the competing sphere of you know the assistant, the AI assistant. And so I think that this is the future. The bot technology, the artificial intelligence is only going to get more sophisticated and be able to do more things and serve us in more efficient ways. So I think that these guys are gonna be in the news again. I bet you that. You know,
interesting.
What do you think? You doubt it? You seem doubtful.
I just don't know if I care. I don't know if I care until they make me care. I think that like it's interesting. The timing of the story is interesting. I feel like they needed something to sort of get the attention off their exploding phones. I think that the acquisition is fine. I don't know what more they're gonna be doing than Allo or whatever else, or Cortana or Siri, but. You know, we'll see. I don't know. It didn't really move my needle, but
to be determined.
Yeah, to be determined. We'll see. So moving on. Speaking of a company that's in trouble. I mean, they've been bought, but Yahoo, man. First, you know, they went from $16 billion evaluation to like $5 billion. Then they were purchased, and then after the purchase was in flux, they announced that they've been hacked,
right.
And everybody's Yahoo account is already in there. Which I kind of knew already because I was for the last year, I felt like I was getting just everyone with a Yahoo account. I kept getting all these crazy spam emails
yeah.
from people. Click this, Joe, from someone from a Yahoo account. That's been going on for like 2 years. I never click it. So. Is someone's either been trying or have already had done this or collected this information over the last 2 years? I feel like I've seen that.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it too.
So now there's information on how to delete your Yahoo account. I mean, that's just not something a brand wants. Is you know a bunch of you know stories on how to delete your Yahoo account.
Yeah,
I mean that's.
Sad. I mean, but I think that is exactly what someone should do. They should right. delete the Yahoo account and yeah. start a Gmail.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and now I think about. I don't know if I even deleted my Yahoo account. I gotta do that shit.
Hey,
I definitely it's somewhere. I don't even think about it, but
to be honest, I have a Yahoo account and I use that for. Wherever I want my spam stuff to go, I use that. When I sign up for an app, right. it's the Yahoo account.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's so sad, though.
I probably have like 3 million unread emails on my Yahoo account. I gotta log in. I'm afraid to log in. My computer might blow up.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's just a little
Yahoo
quick
is
hit.
Doing bad.
Bad. Like they need to change the name.
Man.
I don't think they can save the brand. Unless Meyer tried to sort of reinvigorate and save the brand, I think the brand's just dead, right?
Man.
It's synonymous with crap now. It's like, I don't know if they can revitalize that brand.
Synonymous with who cares?
I know. It's really, wow. They were up a high, too. High. Just like 6-7 years ago, they were up pretty high. Anyway, moving on. This is one of the most interesting stories of the week for me. And this is something that, like, I thought about, and I was like, nah, and I thought about it again. And then now, there's a story in on TechCrunch, which is sort of verifying what I've been thinking, which is Netflix... Is that people, they're talking about it's a Netflix is probably it's not for sale. There's no hint that it will ever be for sale. Although TechCrunch is predicting that it's inevitable that Netflix will be bought, and they're theorizing this that it's going to be Disney or Amazon or Apple. And the reason why they're saying this is they're just looking at the tea leaves, reading the tea leaves that Disney's market cap is 3 times that of Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, Netflix is valuable. These guys, Netflix is a genuine threat to all of these folks.
Mm-hmm.
Now they could pull a Snapchat and give double middle fingers to everybody, mm-hmm. but at a certain point. You can make them an offer. Maybe you make them an offer they can't refuse, and then it allows them to grow within this other thing. But look, listen. So Disney's 3 times the market cap of Netflix, Amazon is worth 8 times that of Netflix, so they can definitely do that. Apple is 12 times the market cap of Netflix. Yeah. Apple could gobble it and keep it moving.
Yeah.
Like, no problem. Amazon can gobble it and keep it moving. Mm-hmm. Disney can gobble it and keep it moving. But, like, Apple really could do it. And it makes the most sense of these three, the most sense for Amazon to do it. Because if Amazon acquired Netflix, and they're real, Amazon's already coming, they're a real player.
Why does it make more sense for Amazon over Apple or Disney?
Well, I shouldn't say that. It makes sense for all of them, first of all. I think it makes the most sense for Apple and Amazon, because these are fledgling media companies that are really trying to get into the media business. Apple's right now in the hardware business and in the software business. Now they're trying to get into the content.
They're in
business,
the content,
right?
Business.
Well, but not like they don't live and breathe in the content business like Disney.
Right. You mean content in one iteration? I mean, they already have music. Content,
right. I'm sorry. So in the programming and in the feature film, right. Television.
Okay.
Content. Apple, you know, they're already trying to do original programming. They're doing stuff on Apple Music. If they purchase Netflix and all of their original content and their machine that's already cranking out billions and millions of dollars and spending $1 billion+ a year on original content, like Apple goes from, you know, just a one company to here in the game.
100%.
And Amazon, who is really also trying to knock on the door of this, would surpass Apple instantly in this world and be really knocking on the door of HBO and all these other companies like Netflix is, you know?
I mean, I agree with you. I think that when you look at those three companies and who has the potentiality to gobble them up and be the most successful, I definitely think it's between Apple and Amazon, because the strategy always for at least Apple, well, I would say for both, for Amazon, is not necessarily the content. The content is just to get people into the home, the ecosystem, so they can purchase the other things. Like Apple wants people to buy computers and Apple TVs and phones and tablets. Amazon wants you to go buy, you know, the groceries and
everything,
and books and all that's everything. Exactly. So to be able to have the content as kind of like the bait on hook to be able to reel them in to do other stuff, I think that would be explosive.
Right.
And that's the thing that Netflix doesn't have. They don't have anything but content.
Well, I was going to ask you, why if you're Netflix, I'm making you the CEO of Netflix, Akili Shine. Why, first of all, would you do the deal ever? And then second of all, if you did, like, why would you? What's in it for you?
I think Netflix has to do something like that, because the propensity for Amazon, Apple, Facebook, YouTube to be able to be a Netflix one day is great. It's high. Because of technology and how easier it is to produce content, like, it kind of levels the playing field. And so, hey, you're spending gobs of money for original content. Well, Apple could theoretically do the same thing and theoretically do it better.
Right.
So if that were to happen in the next few years, like, Netflix may not be the prize place. They might be just like, well, whatever.
Right.
So they have to look at it that way. Like, we're hot now. You may not be hot forever.
Right.
So,
yeah, I don't know. So, also CEO Akili, looking at those three choices, Disney, Apple, Amazon, like, which they all coming to you with different, like, they're all giving you a song and dance. You got all the offices. Which one you going with?
I would say, man,
are you calling Google?
I mean,
or Facebook.
I think a lot of people would be dissatisfied with my answer. But I think it would be Apple, because they have the, like you said, the money reserves. They got the bags of money. And I mean, I think it's a great segue into their hardware. You know, you got the Apple TV, you know, you have your phone, our dependency on our phones and tablets. Like, to be able to have this content platform integrated into that, I think is a perfect segue. But, you know, I think What would be your answer?
Ah, man, I don't know. I think the most attractive answer to me is probably Amazon, just because of the potential of being a part of that thing that actually has every, like you said, has everything, and then you can really go head to head with not only Apple, but go head to head with HBO and all these other content providers, and offer more. It's just interesting to me.
Give me the reason why it's not Disney.
For me, if I'm the CEO of Netflix, it's not Disney, because frankly, F Disney. Like, forget Disney. Like, they, you know, I don't know. I mean, but
they're already carrying Disney. They're already acquiring Disney content.
Yeah, so I'll just keep. Disney ain't gonna stop giving me the content, like, because they didn't let them buy me. Like, okay. I already got them. Forget them.
Okay. Anyway. I hear you. Well, I do want to give a shout out to one of our strong partners, DraftKings.
DraftKings.
And so I don't know how your fantasy football season is going.
Terrible.
Really? Yeah. And what's that you say? Your starting running back has already pulled both hamstrings, and your sleeper pick is still sleeping?
All true.
Well, it's not too late to save your season and win huge cash prizes at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. That means no season-long commitments to bust and bench warmers. Never again will injuries have you combing the waiver wire at 2 a.m. Every week is a brand new season at DraftKings. Just pick your contest, draft your team, and follow the action live. Renew old rivalries with friends and play them every week. Or try 50-50 contests where the top half of all entries actually win cash. Even if your current fantasy team is circling the drain, you can still win huge cash prizes at DraftKings. So, don't wait. Start your season at DraftKings.com now and use our code GEEK and play free with your deposit. Once again, that's code GEEK, G-E-E-K, to play free for your share of over $1 million in total prizes. And this weekend, only on DraftKings.com, and eligibility restrictions may apply, and see the site for details. Once again, that DraftKings.com, promo code
GEEK.
Boom.
GEEK. I agree, because here in week five or six, man, like it's over. I need a fresh start, and DraftKings is the way to have a fresh start every week. So I'm going to do that again and again. So moving on, back to Facebook. Oculus is doing something interesting. They're not having a gender option on their avatars. So obviously, most of these things, whether it's Facebook or Nintendo or Xbox One, when you sign in, you make your avatar. You can make it in your own image. You can make it, they ask you want a male or female. You kind of make it in your own image. What Oculus is kind of doing is not really doing that. They're letting you be kind of who you want to be, or gender neutral. They're asking you for more along the lines of how long do you want your hair to be? How long do you want some other stuff to be? This is kind of saying, it's doing a few things. It's saying, in this world of Oculus Rift, you can be whoever you want to be. And also, in this world of Oculus Rift, it is sort of like a, it's a society where maybe that stuff doesn't matter. It does matter. Just don't try to get with nobody. But anyway, what do you think of this?
I think that it's interesting concept in the real world. We have all these lines of division and these demarcations and these boxes that everyone fits in, and so I think having this fantasy world where all that is kind of nil, or all that is kind of like eroded, right. I think it's interesting, and just to see how people engage and interact in that space, and to be able to create your avatar and not really have those things that either can limit you or give you advantage. I think it's just an interesting concept. I would like to see what happens in the space and all that good stuff, and if it is attractive in that sense. But I think as a concept, it's an interesting conversation piece.
Oculus Rift is here, and the PlayStation View is here. Are you excited about these things? PlayStation looks very interesting.
I mean, I'm excited about definitely the future of these things, in the sense of having more content opportunities. But yeah, I mean, we've been discussing virtual reality since before Facebook grabbed Oculus. Mm-hmm. We've been on this train for a minute, and so I think now, having the hardware accessible and having some content that we can engage in, I think is pretty cool. But I really like to see the usefulness of it. With film and the things that we have an interest in, So I think for me, I'll really be juiced about it when, as a filmmaker, as a producer, director, we're able to harness the technology and create even more captivating stories. And so that's what I look forward to. What about you?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm actually more. I'm really interested about thinking about Xbox. Just do the normal thing, which is in the halfway part of their lifespan, they drop the price of their Xbox One down to $299 in anticipation for the new Xbox, which will be which I think is coming in next year. And the question for me is this going to be a virtual reality thing? Because you want the new PlayStation here and the Facebook's here. I mean, Xbox seems like they have to
announce
some sort of thing. But I've heard nothing in the acquisitions. They're very, very tight-lipped about it. So I'm very interested to see if this is a trend that's going to take over all console gaming, including Nintendo and Xbox. I wonder if when we think about console gaming, will it be exclusively headset, virtual reality based, or will we still be the sort of the active, passive other way? So I'm definitely interested. Those PlayStation games look fun. I mean, I'm not a PlayStation guy, but it's kind of making me want to buy that PlayStation. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, man, I'm interested to see what it looks like this year at E3.
Yeah,
and even CES, like what a lot of these companies have coming out of the pipeline. I mean, I think that to the question that you posited, I think that the video games and the experience on those platforms will be virtual reality centric versus the traditional hand to remote play. So
it's really scary. But I am slightly concerned about what this new virtual reality world and the proliferation of this will do to our children, and I'm just very curious about that, because I think it kind of segue into our next story, but I don't know, you already see kids who grow up on iPads and who are just are able to navigate through iPads quickly as early as 10 months they're at pushing buttons and navigating through iPads and stuff, so
yeah.
Which is also could be a great thing,
yeah.
but the idea of kids, my buddy Ray's kids, they're playing Minecraft. I don't know what the hell they're doing. And they're building shit and playing shit. And they're like I think Ray's 7. Noah's 5. And they're building and it's inconceivable to me. So it's really amazing. I mean, it sort of replaces the old Lincoln Logs and Erector sets that I had as a kid, which is a more tactile version of that. The point that I'm making is when you go to virtual reality, and it's active, what is this going to do for kids? Are we going to see a world of a Wall-E? Is this going to make us smarter, dumber? Is it going to be a way to consume information, learn quicker, and get better reflexes? Or is this going to be a way to sort of make us fat and lazy? I don't know.
I mean, I think every medium of technology solves a problem, but also creates one.
Yeah, so that's a good point.
I think that it's going to do everything that you just said is going to do exactly that. It's going to mess us up and improve us at the same time.
Because I mean, now this is my creative brain's going. You could do crazy immersive learning experience. You can go back in time,
exactly.
Time machine. I'm go back to the
history,
Civil War
history class. Exactly.
And walk around and experience things. Mm-hmm. That's real tactile way of learning and experiencing how things went. Go back and listen to the Gettysburg Address real live. Go mm-hmm. go to the mall in Washington to hear Dr. Martin Luther King's free last speech.
The plantation. No, get to hacking.
I'm not doing that. No bails. No, how many bails did I do?
No, I didn't say that. I said get to hacking.
I'll get to hacking a la Matt Turner. Okay. that's an experiential game. Yes, the Matt Turner experience.
I'm telling you, Bertha Nation should have had the virtual reality, dog.
Yeah, that would have went over really well in this class.
Exactly.
But it's kind of segues into our next story about China, and China is actually trying to pass a law to ban under 18 gamings after midnight. And the reason why is because it's a huge problem in China. China's got Chinese and the game. We talk about Chinese and hacking and Russian hacking. The thing about Chinese and the hacking is one thing, but the gaming, the online gaming, the World of Warcrafts and all those things where you are playing against each other, they've got a three times as many of those types of games that we have, and the popularity of them just by the pure numbers of Chinese people, the billion people there, are insane. So you've got things. We have rooms of 100+ kids in the room, just linked in playing each other, and this is the norm. And so, which what happens is you have these kids playing all night long. The average age between 10 and 39. 20% of all gamers are aged 10 to 19. 20% of these gamers, of that billion kind of people, that's a lot of people. That's like all those weird numbers where you talk about China, there's more, more NBA people, fans, I forget that stat. But
there's more NBA fans in China than there are the entire population of the United States.
Right, exactly. Right. So it's just, if you extrapolate that out, there are more gamers from ages 10 to 19 than half the population of the United States. So I'm making that stat up, but it's something like that. And that's incredible. So what's happening is you got these kids, there's a photo here of these kids all zonked out in the room, the room of 1,000 kids or whatever, kids are just zonked out playing. This is a problem. Yeah, what do you think?
It's definitely a problem. Because it unravels the productivity of the country, having their young able body and mind potential workforce, you know, kind of like paralyzed by the video game. And so I think, you know, that is problematic because, we've talked about on the show too, like how social media, how video games kind of has an addictive quality to it. And so, yeah, you get lost in this experience and lost in this kind of like you're in this medium and you forget about the world that's outside.
Right.
And I mean, that can be damaging to, you know, you as a person and your potentiality for growth. It could be damaging to your family, your community. And it kind of just expands out. So I think having these mandates, like, I mean, you know, in a way it is kind of helpful. It's helpful when you think of it from a national perspective. You know?
Yeah,
and that's how China works.
Do you think that this is going to be something that comes over here? I mean, like, do you think that we're going to have
like a mandate? No.
Well, no, not the mandate. I'm sorry. The gamer culture of having like rooms full of kids, and
I think we already do.
I mean, yeah, we do, but not like at that rate.
Isn't there like huge competitions that happen here? Like, what's the difference?
There is. I guess it's true. I guess it's just that imagery of walking into a warehouse and just seeing. Computer as far as the eye can see, and kids like zonked out. Like, that image is nuts to me. We got to get out of here, but I want to try to get to these last couple stories because this one I really want to get to. This is insane to me as a Star Wars fan and so I'm trying to unpack this very quickly. So the police in Queensland, in Australia or New Zealand, I can't remember if it's Queensland, but anyway, Australia. So in Queensland, Australia, the police try to do a kind of a joke, and this is. You know, where people say every time the police try to do like a photo op or a joke, it kind of goes wrong. Talk about them getting this wrong. There was a photo of the police dressed. It's so ridiculous. The police in Queensland dressed as stormtroopers, right? And locking up a Jawa instead of saying like, we're here. Basically the police are the stormtroopers saying, we're here protecting you
from
the dark side, you know, and no Jawas were harmed making this, no taxpayer funds were used. And first of all, in Australia, this is all wrong. First of all, you know, the stormtroopers are the bad guys. They are the dark side. So, mm-hmm. Having the police be the stormtroopers is not a good look. Second of all, the Jawas are not the bad guys. They're small, passive people. Some of the stormtroopers lock up the bad guys and being like, whatever. Third of all, Australia has their own police brutality issues with indigenous people, their version of black folks there, you know, with aborigines and everything else. So, like, who looks more like the aborigines and who looks more like the white folks in that picture? And, like, this brother's like, get him. Like, this is all wrong.
Yeah, this is super bad, super wrong, distasteful, disrespectful, all of the above. And, yeah, like, I mean, from a popular culture standpoint, like you don't even know the storyline. You're getting the storyline all messed up. Like you said, that is the dark side.
Ridiculous.
How are you fighting against the dark side?
Right.
And then too, like it's just insensitive. It's just insensitive. Like knowing that, you know, what's happening with policing globally, but especially in America and even in Australia, as you alluded to, like to be able to have something like this, even though, hey, it's comical. Like it just doesn't sit well with me. I don't like it.
It's I'm offended as a Star Wars fan. I'm offended as a person of color. I'm offended as a human being. Yeah. It's offensive.
Exactly.
So stay away from my Star Wars, police. That's all I gotta say.
Man.
Moving forward, I want to skip to this last one. I just want to talk really quickly and hit on these five most anticipated Marvel movies in the next 3 years. Marvel seems to have been a little dormant. You know, Marvel seems to be a little quiet. They dropped, Civil War, and then it kind of dipped out for all of 2016. They had a very minimal presence at Comic-Con with Black Panther, and Doctor Strange is coming up pretty soon. But in 2017 through 18.
They're coming with that shit.
They're coming with the heat. So, I mean, just to limit a few, Ant-Man and the Wasp. I mean, Ant-Man was a huge success. They're adding the Wasp. That's gonna be dope. We can talk about that. Captain Marvel. People don't know about Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel is a very, very popular, very extremely well-written book from Marvel, and it's this one's going to be starring my girl Brie Larson, who can do no wrong, in my opinion. She's the dopest. I'm really excited about that, what they're going to do with that. Spider-Man Homecoming, we got a good look at Spider-Man in the Avengers movies. So, I mean, in the Captain America Civil War movie, so that's good to see that new guy. Of course, they're ranking these. Black Panther's coming. We've talked about Black Panther, Michael B., Michael B. Jordan, Lupita, our boy Coogler is directing. So we can't meet Chadwick Boseman. And then Avengers Infinity War, which is going to have everybody doing the thing. And this is not counting Guardians of the Galaxy Chapter 2. What do you think about all these movies?
Man, I mean, sign me up for all of them. I think that, I mean, the slate for the next few years is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about the last one, like that. I mean, that one takes the cake thus far. And like, I'm really excited about Black Panther, but all these other ones in the ensemble, I think, is going to be amazing. Not so excited about Spider-Man.
Wow. Okay.
Just not. I don't know. About it that's just not, resonating with me. But, all the other ones seem pretty, pretty dope.
I think I'm the least excited about, for whatever reason, I'm the least excited about Infinity War. I just don't know. Those movies seem to be just so loud and giant to me. Right. Like, it's kind of the novelty of seeing all the heroes in once. Like, I'm kind of over it because you don't have enough time to really get into these stories. If I had to rank these on my personal thing, I think Black Panther number one for me.
Yeah, 100%.
Captain Marvel number two, Spider-Man number three, Ant-Man and Wasp number four, and then Avengers number five. And the last thing before we get out of here, are you excited about Doctor Strange?
Yeah. I mean, the trailer is off the hook. Super dope, super fresh.
You don't think my man's biting the little Christopher Nolan?
It looks that way. I'm not mad at it. You don't like Christopher Nolan. Like,
I like Christopher Nolan.
Well, you always say he always has these dark blah 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 blah.
He is a little dreary. And it's definitely like you have to. It's just, I don't know, but I always like that because he's an intellectual approach. Yeah. Like, I mean, I heard someone say like he takes genre movies and sends them off to Stanford. So yeah. Like the genre movies and it makes you think about them. But damn, Christopher Nolan, shit, I don't know.
I mean, from the trailer, this movie looks crazy. Yeah. Like just in terms of the effects and just like visually, it just looks spectacular. And right. So I'm really engaged to see the storyline and how they execute it. But yeah, man, I mean, Marvel is the number one franchise of everything of all time. Like, I mean, they're killing it, killing it.
I think they're gonna really drop the Thor's hammer
on DC. I think it's already been dropped.
Well, I mean, DC's got stuff coming. Wonder Woman's coming, looks good. Justice League trailer looked interesting.
Look at that.
Look at that. The Batman, so directed by Ben Affleck, looking good with Deathstroke. I mean,
if we put them all the movies in a column, like I think Marvel's column would be way longer of success. Yeah,
okay, and
you're more of a DC guy, right?
I'm a DC diehard, but they're really killing me with the DC stuff now. Right. But I'm hopeful. I'm just rooting. I'm just a DC,
and not just that. Yo, TV and film, Marvel's killing them. They're killing them.
What? You think Agent Carter's not getting with Luke Cage? No? All right. Well, that's it for us today. Thank you very much for listening and checking us out. We didn't really talk about any movies. It's not really. We didn't get a chance to talk about Birth of a Nation at all. We talked a little bit about that, but maybe we can get into that next week. It premiered to like lackluster box office.
Oh.
And they're already putting a shovel over it and burying it as Oscar hopes before it even gets off the ground. But we can talk about that a little bit next week. Girl on a Train looks like Steve Barry saw it and said, it's a Lifetime movie. That's what he said. It's a Lifetime movie, Joe. That's my bad English accent. Right. We'll see you next week. We'll talk about some movies and some other stuff. Where can people find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can they find you?
You can find my Snapchat at Joe K. Braz. And at JK Braz, and on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K Brazwell. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood be defined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.